probably 16 years ago, I kicked off my pursuit of being a good mom. How many parents are in the house? Well, you can clap if you want to, or just raise your hand, whatever. Whatever applies to where you're at with your children. I can see that. I see that. And the reason it happened 16 years ago is because that is when I had my daughter, my first child, Jada. I was pregnant, and I took a math final junior year in college, and then I waddled on over to the hospital and got my C-section. Big ups to those who could push them out. I couldn't do it. But that moment sort of sparked the, oh, now I got to figure out how to do this thing right, whatever that means, right? Everybody has that good parent, that silhouette image in your head that you can't really see their face. You don't really know what they've done, but somehow they've done it better than you. I wanted to be that person who I came to hate every day that I was a parent. That sort of combined with the fact that, you know, I was in college. It's not generally where you go to pop out babies, at least not on purpose. And I was no exception to that rule. So I was already felt like I was a little behind the curve on that good parent thing. But that was also compounded by the fact that I was raised by a former Ebony Disco queen turned housewife who loved to be a hostess, which, you know, you think good mom, you think the Donna, what is her name? Donna Reed. Thank you. June Cleaver. But in my time, it was Claire Huxtable. That's the Cosby Show mom, right? She worked, but she was really cute and her hair was always done and she brought home the bacon. That's not my mom. Like I said, former disco queen turned housewife turned hostess. So we had these great parties. Where there were platters, Tupperware parties. Of course they were Tupperware parties, right? What else would they be? Triscuits with the Cheese Whiz. And funk music in the background, right? We're talking about, you know, late 70s, early 80s. So there was a lot of funk in the house with the platters, with the Tupperware. But our parties were kicking because what? We had some choice marijuana as well. So there's the marijuana, there's the Cheese Whiz, there's the platters, and there's little Kelly with big glasses and huge twists making cocktails for mommy and all of her friends. So I had an interesting perception of what the good parent is, right? I thought it was fly because I got to hang out with the grown folks. I got to dance to some of the songs. And, you know, my mom thought I was cool. And I learned, okay, so there's this mom thing looks like different things to different people. But again, I felt like I was a little behind the curve. Well, luckily for me, Jesus smiled upon me. And Jada is pretty much, she's been the most low maintenance child I can think of. Although now she's 16, so my mascara disappears. We wear the same shoes. So there's that stuff. But compared to some of the youth I work with, she's very low maintenance. I couldn't ask for anything more. Well, I found myself in a crisis pursuit of the good mommy and the good parent when my 8-year-old son, Zion, fell in love. Yeah, well, it sounds cute, but it's... it was rough. And for those of you who know Zion, either from the Grace or from us working together, you know, this kid is, he's an interesting little bird. He's a sweet pea, but he's what I call my caveman poet because everything is to the extreme. You know, he doesn't giggle. He laughs uncontrollably. He's not kind of concerned. He's like frightfully worried. He doesn't get embarrassed. He gets friggin' mortified and like crawls. Everything is to the extreme. So when he tells me that he's kind of digging on somebody, I'm terrified because I know I am ultimately ill-equipped for this situation. And I am working from the perspective of, even though my mama was a disco queen and we did have musicians around the house all the time, if I was 8 and mentioned anything about digging on a young man, I would have got snatched up so quick. And I would have been called, you know, stop trying to be grown. Stop trying to be fast. And I would have fallen in line. But I call myself trying to be progressive and get all actualized and nurture his spirit and all that crap you hear. So I'm like, all right, I got to figure this out. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Ha ha. For Kelly. So the evening actually started off very well. I was really excited. Tad and I are both poets. We love the written word. And so I was going to see one of my favorite poets at UPS. Jada was going to watch Z. And I came home on this like literary high. I was all inspired. And she signed my book and she gave me a fist bump. And I was like, boom, I was happy. Part of a sort of a side note, I had also decided part of being a good parent meant I wasn't going to like really indulge too much during the week. So I had said I was going to wait till the weekends to have cocktails and not have them during the week. And I had gained some weight. Y'all understand. Some of you understand. You know, 30 hits and the metabolism is just like, see, yep. Yeah. So anywho, I come home on my literary high and I go to Jada's room and I say, well, you know, how was Z tonight? Everything cool? And she goes, yeah, Z was cool, but, you know, he refused to go to sleep before you proofread his love letter. And I said, huh? And she said, yeah. That's your son. And she left me out there in the cold all by myself. She went back to her little iPod and her little homework, and I was out there just chilly, just butt naked in the forest. That's what I felt like. So I said, okay, well, so I'm just going to have to face the music. So, and yes, she did say proofread because unfortunately, because I am into words, I have sort of brainwashed my children to have people proofread their work. So this is that other thing about parenting where you give them little nuggets of wisdom and then it gets used against you. So I go in the kitchen thinking I'm going to cross through the kitchen, to my room thinking, okay, well, maybe he'll be asleep, and nope. And I hear the familiar little shuffle of these awful plaid slippers that he really, really wanted. And so I know he's coming. I turn around and I see him in his little tight pajamas that he won't throw away. And he's got this very carefully crafted letter in his hand. And I said, Sissy told me you had something for me. And he's like, yeah, will you read my letter? I'm like, sure. Happy to do it, dude. Just lying. So I look at the letter and there's like these hearts. Every surface is decorated, right? Y'all remember that. Right, you send letters and you fold them special and you put little messages on every surface. So the first surface is a bevy of hearts, right? So a little heart around that, little heart around that, little heart around that. And at top it says, really love you. And then you open it up, another surface, and it says, could we be better than friends? And I'm just inside, my brain is like, sweating and bleeding, and I'm just like, this isn't gonna get any better. If this is how it started and I haven't even read the letter, I don't know what I'm gonna do. So I'm like, all right. So I just open it up and it's, dear Aurora, please don't go crazy. You know, if you can't be with me, I'll never be able to play with you again, and I'm going to leave the Wolf Club. And I don't know what that means, but apparently the stakes are high. Whatever. So we get past the Wolf Club. You know, you're pretty. You have a great sense of humor. By the way, can I have your phone number? And he ends with just say these two words, girlfriend. And I don't have the heart to tell him, yeah, see, he thought, see, DJ thinks, so. Ooh, Mac move, yeah, whatever, okay? I don't have the heart to tell him girlfriend is not two words, but that's neither here nor there. I'm thinking, you have bigger fish to fry. Focus, Kelly, focus. So I immediately turn and I make myself a rum and Coke because calories be damned, I need help here. And Brother Bacardi is going to help me out. So I read through it and I say, wow, dude, you really put it all out there, didn't you? And he's standing there again in his little tight jammy jams. And he's like, yeah. I just want to punch him. I love him, and I just want to throw him against the wall. I'm like, I can't do this. And he goes, yeah, well, you always tell me I need to express myself. Again, nuggets of wisdom. Back to punch me right in my face. I said, yeah, I have. But, you know, it's probably not really a good idea for you to pursue a relationship at this time. Second grade is not... it's not really feasible. You got recess, you got basketball, you've got reading groups and all of that. And so maybe you guys should just really have a good friendship and call it good. You know, I'm trying to find that middle ground because, again, I have literally visualized myself either running out and never coming back to my home again, throwing him against the wall until he's unconscious, or loving on him. So I'm trying to find some middle ground. I'm trying to have boundaries and not crush his little baby spirit, because he was clearly, he had spent some time on those hearts. He has spent time on the surface of each piece. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to just find this little middle ground. So I said, honey, I don't think it's a good idea that you give it to her. I think it's good you got it out on paper, but y'all just be friends. And he's like, well, you know, if I don't, she's going to be with Alex, and he's a jerk. He lies, and he's mean. But I can tell that, you know, they like each other. And if I don't, you know, and that's that competitive caveman stuff happening. I was like, honey, just let it go. Don't even worry about it. Go to bed, sleep on it. We'll figure it out. Give me the letter because I'm going to do my best to hide it when he goes to sleep. So that was that evening. And I am traumatized. I'm traumatized. I instantly get on the phone. I'm calling my friends like, girl, calm down. I knew not to call my mama because she would have just said, you should have popped him right in his mouth. This from the former disco queen. Whatever. Anywho, so the next morning comes at 6:45. Nobody in my house is a morning person. It's not a time to have deep dialogue, to diatribe about nothing. It's time to get her done. Wash up, brush it, eat, and let's be up out of here. We got business to do. So I've peeled off Zion's SpongeBob comforter. He swung his little feet around. And I go directly into the kitchen because Zion needs to eat breakfast like he works on the railroad. He always has to have like a country hot breakfast. And I feel like when he doesn't get that, he's just not nice. And so I feel like I owe it to the educators in his school to send him off proper. Like, that's what you do. So I'm making the eggs, and I hear the shuffle of the plaid slippers. And then I don't see him. So I turn around, and he has crawled under the dining room table and looked as pitiful as he possibly could. And I said, dude, my life is over. Don't be feeling bad for him. I was like, what? My life is over. I was like, why? Aurora, Mom. When I saw her, I felt something in my chest and I got cold. I was like, why? Were you outside? He's like, she was so beautiful. And you're telling me I can't talk to her, and I just, my life is over. And then she's going to be with Alex. And I was like, dude, here's the deal. Let me just give you a little breakdown, a little wisdom from Mama. If Alex is the butthead you think he is, the buttheads of the world, generally, they kind of kill it for themselves. So just be Aurora's homeboy. Y'all continue to read together, play, do your thing, and she'll realize you're the better man. And he sort of gives it a little thought, and his little pink lip goes back in. So I feel like, okay, I've got him. I've, you know, made a little connection there. And so I said, okay, now go and finish getting dressed so you can get these eggs. You know you're nice when they're cold. Let's do this. And he's like, all right. So he goes off to his room. And then I freak out because I have two people in my head going, really? Did you just give your 8-year-old dating advice? No, I didn't. I was just being smart. No, you was condoning this. That's what you was doing. No, you were letting him express himself. Nope. Watch. He gonna go be girl crazy, and that girl's parents is gonna call you, and it's gonna be all bad. We got enough problems. No, you're just trying to find middle ground. That's all you're gonna do. Just quit tripping. Not everything's gotta be major. But when you are, you know, all you can see is this good parent checkbox that you want to check. Every decision, every little interaction becomes way more than it needs to be. So I go in my room. I'm finishing getting ready. Zion comes in and he says, I just want to ask you one more question. I said, all right, what? How am I supposed to move forward? It's, by this time, it's maybe between 7 and 7:15. I can't with this kid. I can't. I was like, what? What do you mean move forward? Well, I don't even know how to be. And I have nothing. I have nothing left. I used all my, all my good stuff on the last speech. I got nothing. So all I had was recovery lingo. So I was like, babe, just one day at a time. Just take it one day at a time. It's going to get better. Just focus on today. So okay. So I go on about my day praying that this just is over when I pick him up. I go pick him up. He comes in the car, and he has got a little pop on a stop. You know, he's got this curly hair that's, bouncing all over the place, and he hops in the car, and I said, wow, dude, it seems like, you know, the day ended up better than you thought. And he says, yeah, and I said, what happened? And he put his little caramel fist in the air, and he said, she's mine! I got her! And I haven't pulled off, of course. I can't. At this point, I'm stuck. I said, first of all, the feminist in me kicks in, and I'm like, no woman is your possession. Not now, not ever. But I'm happy that things turned out the way you wanted. You want to break it down to me? What went on? And Alex was lying. He held her hand once, but she didn't like it. And so I knew that there was something there. And I went over and I talked to her. And I put my hand on her shoulder. And I told her that she was pretty and that I loved her sense of humor. I said, okay. So then what happened? Well, she walked over to me and she told me that I was funny and cute and I was so freaking out. And now we're only going to play with each other. And I was like, play with what? Play how? Okay, well, by this time I've quieted my mother's voice in me because I know it's we're so far past that. But I also don't have any Bacardi in the car. It's just not, it's not safe. It's not responsible parenting. So I said, all right, dude, well, just remember, keep your lips on your face. And if you're pushing her on the swings, you keep your hands in mommy appropriate places. And he goes, Mom, I know what's appropriate. I know what's appropriate. Uh-huh, all right, whatever. So we drove off and life was happy until a few weeks later it's probably more like a month or so later when he actually decided to move on to her twin sister. But a few, this taught me more than anything that I can really be caring and have discipline at the same time, and that this pursuit of the good is sort of a fool's errand because you just keep them alive. You keep them alive. You try to keep them out of jail, at least for a long sentence, overnight, whatever. No big whoop. It happens to a lot of us. And I guess lastly, the thing I learned was that I really need to hire my son as my dating coach.